This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. When it comes to children's literature, we know about the fairy tale princesses, we remember the talking animals, wizards, muggles, and cartoon drawings. But what is it that makes children's literature memorable? What is the craft in writing for the most impressionable readers? Jean-Claude Bemis is the 2013 Piedmont Laureate for Children's Literature. He's hosting a series of roundtable discussions with local children's book writers about their work. And the first one is tonight, 7 o'clock, Regulator Bookshop in Durham. Frances O'Rourke Dowell is one of tonight's speakers. Her own book is called, well, the latest anyway, The Sound of Your Own Voice, Only Really Far Away. Welcome back to the show, both of you. Good to have you here.
Great. Thanks for having us on.
John, tell us about this. Piedmont Laureate, and you've got you've carved out a children's specialty. Is that it, or is it a particular Piedmont Laureate for children's literature that's
well,
in the position?
Well, each year, the Piedmont Laureate program, which is sponsored by the various arts councils of Raleigh, Wake, Durham, Orange, and Alamance, they pick a writer from a different genre. We've had poetry. We've had nonfiction, playwrights, fiction. And this year was children's literature.
And why do you think that's important?
Why children's literature is,
yeah,
is important.
And to really focus on it, to say all of these arts councils want to send you out as the ambassador.
Absolutely. Well, it's its own very particular art form, you know, writing for these young readers. And those books, I mean, think about those books are ones that we all have come in contact with, you know. As an adult, we might not delve into some other literature, but we all grow up affected by these stories in childhood.
As long as we had someone to read to us, we were doing it.
Sure, yes, and that's a critical piece, isn't it? Yeah.
Tell us about your book from 2012, The Prince Who Fell from the Sky.
Oh yeah, so my most recent book was a post-apocalyptic jungle book, you know, set in a future where there are no people left on Earth and animal characters. I've always loved those books, Watership Down, the Jungle Book, where we have animal characters, and that was a book to have these animal characters who find a human boy in the forest. They've never seen a human before, and it's a fun book. It was a fun
book. Figure out what to do with them.
That's right.
You write fantasy adventure novels for kids. What are some of the types, then, that you deal with? Do you deal in sort of some mythic types that find their way into this kind of fantasy writing?
I do. And one of the things that I'm drawn to as a fantasy writer is I love reading about the books with wizards and dragons and some of these kind of these archetypes that we're used to in children's fantasy. But I'm interested in exploring some other, you know, newer and different archetypes. I mean, I've been on in the past with you talking about the 9-Pound Hammer and this Clockwork Dark series that I did, which was American folklore kind of set into this epic fantasy world.
And the thing is, we all need a point of reference. I mean, somehow there's no way literature works. I mean, I'm stunned at the ability of my wife and I to read to our nearly 2-year-old grandson. We've been doing it now for months and months and months. And he's at the point where he will really sit down and pay attention and get the characters. And I'm thinking, what's his reference point? How does he know about this lady flying in a buttercup who's throwing all the seeds on the ground? Something about it. He's got to know something about the world in order for him to stay interested in that book.
Yeah, I think that that's true. I think that there's a certain level of background knowledge that children are absorbing. And there's something, too, just kind of the way these certain archetypes resonate with us. You know, we dive into some of that Joseph Campbell kind of stuff and myth, you know, the world of myth and fairy tales and so forth.
It's in there.
There's something in there, right?
Plus, he's pretty clear that by then that grandma and grandpa aren't really going to walk around anymore. They're tired.
Oh,
so
right.
He's just giving us a break. I think that's a big part of it.
He said,
Papa's tired. I think I'll sit down with the poor old man. Frances, tell me about your new book, The Sound of Your Own Voice, Only Really Far Away.
It's The Sound of Your Voice, Only Really Far Away.
Only, I've got the only.
It's
the
got
wrong
so
place.
Many words, the temptation to add more is strong. I understand. Now, this is the third book in the Secret Language of Girls trilogy. It's about Kate and Marilyn. Started out with the Secret Language of Girls when they were in sixth grade. Best friends who go their separate ways, have a falling out. But still are involved, connected to each other. The second book was The Kind of Friends We Used to Be, which got them into seventh grade, and now they're in the spring of seventh grade, and The Sound of Your Voice, Only Really Far Away, which I think I said right.
And yeah, you, see, you don't have it in front of you, and I did, and I still got it wrong. The and if, obviously, you write for older readers, sort of middle school kind of reader, and girls. You're writing for girls.
In this book, I write for both. I just had had a talk with some kids yesterday, went to their school, and one of their questions was, why do you write most of your books for girls? Because I do have a couple books that have boy protagonists. I said, well, that's my experience of life is as a girl, and although I was a tomboy, and I'm somewhat comfortable going into boys' heads. And now that I have sons, I'm very comfortable stealing from their lives. so you may see some more boy books coming from me. But these books, I've never gotten a letter from a boy saying, wow, I loved The Secret Language of Girls. Mm-hmm. It really spoke to me. Maybe I might, but I haven't. And so these are girl books. And one of the reasons I started writing about these characters in the first place is I wanted to write the book that I was looking for when I was that age, mm-hmm. about these kind of friendships. And there were some. I found some of it in some Judy Blume, but I really wanted – It's interesting how often I get letters from girls saying, oh, this is me, and really identifying with one or other of the characters.
And you have talked about in the past the fear you had going into this that you would no longer relate, that what girls are doing today is not what you did and might not work.
Right. That was my huge fear. I went ahead and kept writing and said, this is the story I want to write. But I thought, I'm writing about things that really happened to me in 1975, 1976, 76. I mean, I'm shocked by how long ago that was. And I really wondered if girls would relate. I really think the main thing that has changed is the technology. Mm-hmm. But I'm just shocked by how often I hear from girls saying, yes, this is my life. I'm like, wow, it was mine too.
Now little sixth grade girls say, oh, we're not tweeting her anymore. It's just the technology,
but it's the same thing. And unfortunately, I think the technology can allow some of this to get a lot meaner.
Yeah.
Notes and slam books hurt, but Facebook
What's it, do you try to stay up with all of that to keep it in there?
I do. I think, I had a book a few years ago, 10 Miles Past Normal, which is actually set in ninth grade. And a friend of mine, she's like, someone's got a text in this book. Someone's got, you need that. And I actually was emailing because she's much more savvy than I am. I'm like, do kids still email? And she's like, no, they don't. Yeah. So I have gotten, and again, we're having children who are in middle grade and high school is coming in quite handy.
Yeah. So, John, and the other thing is we've talked about types and archetypes, but you think that character is still critical, that this is what anybody is looking for in a good story.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that so much of what's wonderful about these books for young people is the way the readers, as an author for children, mm-hmm. We keep that audience in mind. We think about who these readers are and what they're going to take away from it. Because I think that young people, when they read a great book, those are those books that later in life will often say, that was that book that really changed my life. And part of it comes down to those characters. Who were those characters in the book? Were we able to identify with those characters? Did we believe in them? Did we admire them? Did we sympathize with their predicament and how that connects us with a really wonderful children's book character?
Does that change a lot? We're living in this world where sort of the anti-hero is king, and where heroes are changing a lot from one generation to another. Are they anchored? Are these core characters who we're attracted to typed in some way, or do you have to stay with the culture to know what kind of character and what sort of vernacular they might be?
That's a really interesting question. And I think one of the reasons that I like middle grade fiction so much is I don't think you get into those issues yet. I think you're still working with a sympathetic narrator or a character like Harry Potter who readers can step into. I think that's part of the brilliance of Harry Potter is you read it, you become Harry, And I think at this age, the 9 to 12, they're really still looking for stories like that. When you get into YA, it's become much more the anti-hero, much more dystopian fiction.
You know what's interesting? So, and I've been thinking about this particular aspect with characters because the new book that I'm working on is a retelling of the Pinocchio story. And here's a book where characters, I feel like, is in dire need of an update. The traditional story is quite moralistic. And, you know, the naughty boy. Mm-hmm. And I think that young readers and even as adults, like, we respond differently to that kind of archetype of the naughty boy who needs to listen to his parents. And yeah. So, you know, it's
yeah, well,
it's
what's
kind of,
wrong with that
yeah.
story is that's the way we tell it because that's the moral we want. But the real story is about becoming fully human.
Yes.
And that is the ultimate story. And if you can tell that one right, you've got yourself at least a bestseller in my house.
Well, good. Yeah. I hope so. Well, yeah.
And that's the hard thing to do is to yeah. not let these things kind of fall into that big giant trough of...
Right. And one of the things that you're hitting on there is that idea of becoming fully human. And I think that not just with the Pinocchio story, but with so many children's books, that's what it comes down. You know, because kids are transforming. They are not, you know, as adults, we can get relatively static. Whereas children, you know, that's what childhood is all about, is transforming from this very dependent, you know, person to hopefully an independent person. And stories reflect, you know, great children's books reflect that transformation for young people.
Right, and it gets harder and harder. And I would think for the kids in your group, the people you're writing for, Francis, so much more powerful because biologically, yes, there's a demand placed on them to become something else. Mm-hmm. And as they look out in the great vast adult world out there, it's like, why would I want to be one of them?
And I think that's, yeah, a fair yeah. question.
Yeah.
And it's also, I think, one of the things in this day and age, when you're talking about kids who are pre-adolescent, moving into adolescence, what's really difficult is there's so much of the culture is really encouraging them to be sexual in a way that's scary,
right?
You know, and they can't show that.
And reductive.
Yes,
this is,
and
reductive. This is all I
yes,
am.
This,
I
is this
really
who
feel
I am?
I'm more than this.
And, and obviously this is especially about girls, but I think boys too. I think it covers all the territory.
So when you write, do you have a drive or any kind of need? Do you feel a need to become moralistic, to help shape an identity?
That's kind of scary. You know, I think I have – I think if I tell the true story – it'll come with its meanings. And if I, I think you have to be very careful about being moralistic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because the book will stink of that,
yeah.
you know, and
yes.
no one wants, we go to stories for stories, not for, you know,
right.
especially when you're a kid. You don't want a moral, you don't want to be told how to behave. At the same time, I want my characters to be moral, if only to, and not if only, but that they're aware that their choices, what they're doing, right. affect other people.
Well, one of the ways I think you do that is by giving your characters agency, because so many characters in your age group, when we're talking about adolescent children, are characters who things happen to.
Mm-hmm.
And it yes. seems to me that you give your characters a little more agency. They have some control over mm-hmm. their environment and their futures.
And I also, and one of the things with The Sound of Your Voice that I wanted to do, so it's interesting to be working with the same group of characters over mm-hmm. over time, over a number of books. And one of the things that is very tempting as a writer, especially one who I'm aware of my audience, even if I'm writing about seventh grade, I know I have fourth grade girls who are reading the books, and that does play a part. I could be all like, I'm a writer and I have my rights, but I feel like, no, I feel responsible mm-hmm. to those kids. And it's very tempting to not put your characters in harm's way. It's also tempting to not have them be essentially good, you know? And so I wanted in this book, I really was looking for ways, like, I want them both to make mistakes. I want them to be bad. And actually, and I backed, you know, I was like, what is that? Do I want them to rob a bank? Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, but I want them, because thinking about that time, I mean, one of the painful things about adolescence, and particularly early adolescence, it is a time where you make mistakes that are very, or you do things sometimes on purpose that are very hurtful to other people. So, and I did, and I'm not going to go into detail about what I did. And I wasn't a bully.
Yeah.
It wasn't
yeah.
like a constant mode,
right.
but I can remember a couple situations where with friends or on my own, you know, and those are the things I actually, other childhood things that I did, you know, I think, oh, you know, you're just a kid.
Well, doing those things and reflecting on them later is what one of the things that helps you become fully human at some point.
I think so. I think so. And those mm-hmm. are the things that I regret. And I think that, you know, they do make me who I am today, because that's a horrible thing to live with, that you were deliberately hurtful. And that's kind of happens that they're not Kate and Marilyn aren't so Kate they're not bullying, they're not going after, but they make choices that they're fairly conscious of that they know are wrong and are betrayals. And that's interesting, to make your character, who's essentially a good kid, do something that's kind of cruddy.
All right. And what it allows you to do, I think, is not only reflect on how you behaved and perhaps change that behavior, because you see what your motivations were and you can kind of control that in the future, but also you see, hey, if I think I'm a pretty good person and I'm capable of that, then when you did that to me, I guess that's what that was all about. Mm-hmm. You're a little more sympathetic to some of the lousy behavior that you're the victim of. So, John, you were an elementary school teacher. Did that teach you anything about writing for kids?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, one of the reasons I went into elementary education as a teacher was because how much I love these kind of books. And I just have to give a shout out here, because Frances, I actually taught, before I ever met you, I taught her book, Dubby Code, to so many groups, like countless groups of fourth and fifth graders. And so you know, I kind of come at it from that kind of background of seeing how kids, how they respond to those great books.
Are they reading more or less these days? What do you know?
More. So I think, what do you think, Frances?
I think so. I mean, they certainly have all this new technology that makes getting books easy. I think that I also think that so many schools are really focused on writing and reading going, you know, they go hand in hand. But yeah, I think so. I'm always amazed, too, when I do school visits at what kids are reading and how many, you know,
what you mean in terms of level of sophistication?
Or just the wide variety.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's all over the place. It's not, you know, I mean, there's, you know, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Harry Potter. There's certain titles, Hunger Games, that come up, but then this amazing variety.
And I think that some of the truly best, there's so much wonderful children's literature out there, and I think some of the very best children's literature has been written in the past 10, 20 years. There's been
some
extraordinary.
That,
I guess so.
We have examples of that right here.
With
John Claude Bemis, the 2013 Piedmont Laureate for Children's Literature, Frances O'Rourke Dowell, the author of The Sound of Your Own Voice.
Nope.
The own isn't in there, so let me do it right.
Okay, you can do it.
The Sound of Your Voice, Only Really Far Away.
Yes, that was lovely.
Frances O'Rourke Dowell. And the two of them are going to be at Regulator Bookshop in Durham tonight at 7 o'clock talking about children's books. You can be there as well. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.